Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to NXT. It doesn't start with NXT. It starts with PWT. PWT talks NXT. NXT at Webby is tomorrow. A rollicking start to a show with a rollicking finish. Dominic Mysterio, your new North American champion. It started to burrow into my head a little bit last week, even. I was just like, they've spent just enough time with Judgment Day that they might do this. But I didn't know how long it would take, and I just thought, is this where they do Dominic's first championship? And maybe it makes sense. And it's funny to me that it's in NXT, because famously he skipped NXT. So kind of amusing in a meta sense. But God, this guy, the level of response that he gets from the crowd is
incredible.
Heels would kill for this. And he's constantly got this going, and they're showing, there are always D-bags in the audience trying to get on screen by putting their heads in their hands and doing fake looking reactions. This time they didn't have to search. They were everywhere. People just like, I cannot believe they did this. Dom has the most real heel heat in a 1980s sense of anybody, I don't know, since the 1980s, 90s. I just love what's happening with him. I don't know. I can't say enough good things about that act. I can't believe he's our North American champion, that Wesley didn't have this long reign expecting to lose this to Dominic Mysterio, but here we are. And they even did a scene where Wes still had to get to the Great American Bash. He's not there yet for that match. Now, do I think that next week he'll get added to the Great American Bash match? I do. I think he'll talk about the beef that he has with Dom and especially Rhea, and he will get himself inserted into the match. Maybe he wins it back there, and that's the end of this Dom thing, and maybe not. I think the title change is worth it regardless of what they're going to do, but at any rate, what a bang. And what a thing to start us off. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm your host. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games. Nate, who are you? And how did you find our 10-minute and 30-second main event in which Dominic Mysterio is your new champion?
Well, I'm Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the hits and misses for NXT on pwtorch.com, and I have one up on the site for you guys to check out. I gave this a chance of happening last week. Bruce and I talked about this, it might have even been Brad that brought up the chance of Dominic winning. I feel like some either a call or an email or brought up the idea, and I kind of rolled with it. I was like, I give it a small chance because I didn't feel like Wesley's. Even though he had a really long reign, I liked the reign. I wasn't necessarily ready for it to end, but I was like, at the same time, Dominic Mysterio is an absolute heat magnet. Like you were just talking about, it's the Judgment Day is one of the biggest acts in WWE as a whole right now. Why not put the belt on Dominic? He can, like you were talking about, actually, how did Bruce put it in our chat? He said something like, I don't know. Of course I say it. He can't. I don't have it up here. What did he say? He's going to gloat like a Knicks fan when their team makes the playoffs. I kind of like that. And that's it. He's going to, like, he didn't actually win the title. Judgment Day won the title for him. He just happened to be the one in the match. He was the one that made the pin, but it was a team effort. It took all three of the other members of Judgment Day to actually make this happen. I love that. He's going to gloat about it. Like he won clean, and it's just going to help to build heat. Dominic has, like you said, the heat that he can muster is unlike anything I've seen in recent memory in WWE anyway. So all for it. And I think this is going to be a super fun run. I really do. I think this is going to be however long it's going to be, you know, whether it be, cause I don't think Dominic's going to be down in NXT for 4, 5, 6 months. Right. I think this is going to be some sort of a transitional run. Excuse me. You know, kind of similar to like Dolph Ziggler when he won the NXT title. I think it was what, like maybe 4 weeks, 5 weeks, something like that, that he had the title, you know, just in between two different NXT PLEs or something like that.
This one's going to be 12 days.
I can't see it lasting any longer than that. If longer than that, maybe a week or two, but I really don't. Whether it comes back to Wesley or not, that is the question. Who else is in that? Who else is in that match? It's wow. Why am I blanking on who else is in that match?
It threw me because I didn't. I wasn't expecting this to happen. So now this is all I'm thinking about. I'm not thinking about the match that I thought was going to happen.
Yeah, right. But still, like it doesn't seem to me. Now I feel like I got to look that up. Great American Bash 2023 card. Because
do your talking. I'm looking it up.
Yeah. All right. Cool. But it all depends. Oh, Mustafa Ali. Right. Mustafa Ali. Because that's who we kept talking about as the next North American champion. And I still think it potentially could be him. I mean, it looks like it's probably going to be Mustafa Ali versus Dominic Mysterio. That's heel versus heel. You've got to interject a face. You could potentially interject two with Tyler Bate as well, because Tyler Bate kind of has a little bit of a claim to the North American title, sort of. So, I mean, it could even be a fatal four-way. We talked about making Tyler Bate, Mustafa Ali, and Wesley a triple threat. So why not add Dominic in there now as the new champion as a fatal four-way? I'm not a huge, huge proponent of multi-man matches like that, but it makes sense. Kind of seems like that might be the direction they were to go. I think Tyler Bate probably has a little bit less of a chance of making it into the match than Wesley. So I definitely think it's going to be a multi-person match. Mustafa Ali versus Dominic Mysterio, I think it'll be a good match. I don't really see.
Yeah, there's no way that's happening.
There's no way that's going to happen. There's no way it's going to happen. So I love the decision. Dominic's awesome, and for however long the Judgment Day or Stay Down in NXT, I'm on board.
Yeah, Mustafa Ali, he was basically talking Wesley out of the championship, getting himself a match with Dominic, who does not fight with honor, and therefore he thinks maybe he's got a better chance. I don't know. I think it was just purely getting in Lee's head that he was doing. But yeah, at any rate, this will be a triple threat with the face having issues with both guys equally. And that could be some pretty good stuff. Let us go to the one other long match on this show. The opener, Dragon Lee and Nathan Fraser versus Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo. That's, you know, not a lot of meat on this bone other than the fact that Garza and Carrillo look like they're going to be breaking up. They lost their tag team name, so losing the tag team couldn't have been far behind. 11 minutes and 27 seconds. Valentina Feroz and Yulisa Leon are looking on here. The Los Lotharios explode after the match. Carrillo shoved Garza? Is that the way it was? I think Carrillo did the shoving.
Yes. Correct.
Yeah. When I don't have to type the recap, I'm less likely to remember. But at any rate, that is what happened.
Old man.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. This tag team seems to be no more. I don't know that. I wish this tag team would have done more, but if they weren't going to, then it's really, really hard to define them as anything but what they were. So they'll give it a shot in singles with these two. I've been kind of just in disbelief at how little Angel Garza's gotten to do with his just unbelievable magnetism that he's got. I feel like it's still untapped on the main roster, but Dragon Lee gets the Duke in this one, pinning Garza, and then the tag team, they done broke up, Nate.
They done broke up. The goddang done broke up. Not only did they lose their tag team name, but they regained their first names too. So recently. So that's something. I'm fine with Los Therios kind of breaking up. I mean, they hadn't really done a whole heck of a lot with them. I think there was an injury in there too somewhere where Carrillo was off TV for a little bit, but still. I'm a huge fan of Angel Garza. When he was in NXT as a singles competitor, like, I thought he was on track to be like potentially North American champion, maybe even have not a run with the title, the NXT title, but maybe a run at the title. I definitely saw that charisma there where I'm like, okay, they could build and mold a main event level star out of this. And then they kind of stuck him with his cousin and, whatever. And that's fine. Not everybody can be a main event level guy. But as you said, I feel like he's definitely underutilized, underrated. Maybe this is kind of the catalyst for that. Take him away from his cousin and you put them in a feud, break up the tag team and then see what they can do on their own. I'd be a little bit more worried about Carrillo because I feel like he's a great wrestler, but I feel like the charisma is not quite as there. He's got a little tougher time connecting with the audience. But I think it's still doable. He'll be the Devon to Angel's Bubba. Yeah. Bubba, when they split him up, Bubba had the better run than Reverend Devon. Anybody. Yeah. As far as the match went, like I thought this was it was a fun match. It wasn't this one that was really short. It was Scripps. The Scripps and Bronco Lima, Lucian Price match was really short. That's what I was thinking of. But curious to see where this goes with Los Lotharios and if they do really wind up breaking up or if it's kind of a red herring. And if they stick around in NXT, it seems like that might be the case, but they're still giving them, I think it was last week we saw them backstage and rather than giving them like the NXT nameplate when they showed up on screen, it was still the Raw nameplate. So they're still, at least as of last week, coding them as Raw talent, but they're here in NXT. They've got now potentially a singles feud between each other in NXT. So we'll see. I'm curious to find out what's going on with them.
We were your mid-show main event was the Tony D thing. So Tony D'Angelo is out of prison because in Florida you can get out of prison using a wrestling match. That's weird in any other state.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Thought that I was going to.
Yes.
Yeah, they march to the beat of their own drummer down there in the Southeast. But yeah, he's out. Folks, he's free. He's got a cousin Maria who was all dolled up, so you know that she's probably somebody. The other girl looked like she might be somebody, but they didn't name her, so maybe they just needed another girl there, and she'll be somebody in the future. And if we ever watch this episode 2 years from now, we'll go, oh hey, it's her. But yes, they
8 years back in 8 years.
There you go. They mentioned cousin Maria. So she could be something important going forward. But at any rate, Tony D is out. The fans gave him a warm welcome for beating the correct murder charges. But that's what this story is. They had a master plan. They showed us, if all this was filmed, why weren't we shown this in the first place when we were shown other things from that same scene? Very, very fishy. But Gallus, they're the buffoons. They don't know what's going on. And Mark Coffey went through the provolone. That is where this scene went.
Mark this is Coffey. My favorite line of the night.
Yes, Mark Coffey threw the provolone. I don't know. This was a lot of time to spend on Tony D, who has never risen very far since their initial over push of him when he was not so good. And now he's somewhat worthy of that push and he's not getting it. But it seems like it really feels like these are the next tag team champions. But they've been so sparing with title changes tonight, notwithstanding. It's hard to say for sure, Nate.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, Gallus has, well, what? I feel like their reign has been a couple few months long now. They haven't had many title defenses really yet. So I don't know. Actually, I'm almost talking myself out of them getting a win here. Not Gallus, them being the D'Angelo family. But it almost does feel like it. Like, you know, we talked, I think it was last week, Bruce and I were talking about how Stax has just surpassed our expectations for him. You know, I remember when it was the first time we saw Stax and Two Dimes out there, you know, both of them stood out to me. Stax stood out a little bit more, but at the time, I couldn't tell either one apart. I don't think I could actually tell Stax apart from Two Dimes until Two Dimes is actually off TV, to be completely honest with you. But ever since, like, Stax, his in-ring work is fantastic, especially when you compare it to Tony D'Angelo. And he's really starting to prove that he is also a good charismatic talent, you know, and that he can hold his own on the mic. You know, I feel like he's probably on the same level as Tony D'Angelo is, you know, with the mic skills right now, you know, if not very comparable anyway. They're both able to tell a pretty, you know, compelling story, as I guess compelling as you can make something like this in a wrestling world, but whatever, it's working. Like I said, even with the last name Lindbergh, mostly Italian, I've always loved like mafioso stories, The Godfather, Goodfellas. My best friend and I for the last 25 years have been making a mob movie. We come back to it every couple of years, so it like shows us aging and shit, which is kind of fun. So I like the gimmick. I dig the gimmick. But I still think that it is not, I was gonna say scripts, Stax. I still think it is Stax that might have been the rat this whole time. And still is going to double turn and double cross the boss, double cross the Don. And we'll find out that even though he, you know, as tonight we found out that, you know, they were playing Gallus this whole time. Well, maybe he was playing both Gallus and D'Angelo to become the new Don. That is one way that they could get out of transitioning the titles from Gallus over to the D'Angelo family. If this is, because I'm assuming this is going to be the match, Great American Bash, D'Angelo family versus Gallus. So if they didn't want to move the titles and they wanted to get into the Stax D'Angelo feud, then that could be a way they go into it. But I'm still not sure because, you know, there's been a lot of focus on how Stax has been loyal. So that's either telling me foreshadowing for them breaking up very soon, or they're trying to drive the fact in that he is loyal and they're not breaking up. But I think it might be the former.
Yeah, this one's weird because I have been wondering, I wondered all night also if this was like a triple fake out and he is indeed trying to usurp the throne. But then I was like, maybe we're not even supposed to be thinking that. We're probably not supposed to be thinking about that part of the story at all anymore. But then that makes me think, of course, it's still going on because they told us that the story is over. I don't know. It's been very silly, but I've enjoyed the ride. It's been good kind of silly. I can dig what they're doing. So yeah, it's, I never thought that I would get that much into Tony D stuff early on when he was a one note character and, didn't like his character. And then he got in the ring and I was like, oh, Don't like him there either. Didn't think that I would get to this point with him, but here we are. All right. We got four other matches. All of them are very short. Let's talk Trick and Mello and Ilya. So these guys open the show. Mello and Ilya had a war of words, and it was quite good. It added a lot of sizzle to a match that didn't naturally have any. This whole company has become pretty good at taking somebody who almost feels like they shouldn't be in that spot against that guy, and then giving us a whole lot of reason to be into it. Last week, they got the stupid crap out of the way with a little bit of in-ring miscommunication. And this week, they put all the meat on it with these guys going in there and giving it their best on the mic. Trick kind of staying out of the way, not doing a lot of silly stuff so they could really put over this championship match. Then later in the show, the Schism, yep, they're still around. I do not think of the Schism when they're not on screen. Every time they show up, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what I feel. And then my second thought is, oh, grizzled young veterans, I want you out of that role so bad. But we got a scene with Schism where one of the masked people may or may not have disturbed the shit a little bit and gotten these two groups to fight each other. We've got a six-man. I would have thought the six-man was tonight, except for the fact that we were running out of time. The six-man will be next week with Grizzled Young Veterans and Joe Gacy. God, I still call him that. Dyad. And Joe Gacy against Ilya Dragunov, Trick and Mello. So that should be a lot of fun. I would think that will anchor the show tomorrow and be the final piece of the puzzle before we head to Sunday's Great American Bash. So, yeah, I really liked these promos. I know Bruce was pro opening promos as well. So do you complete the trifecta, or do you have some kind of beef with these guys, Nate?
Now I just want to say get some beef just to be contradictory, but I can't. No, it was a great way to open the show. We see Trick and Mello open the show quite often, and I'm okay with it. As long as it doesn't turn into like, you know, every single week, a Monday Night Raw Triple H coming out and giving a 15-minute long diatribe of how awesome he is. Then I'm totally cool with it. They're entertaining. They mix it up each week, and the fans dig it. The crowd's always behind him. I think Trick is super underrated on the mic. I don't think he's nearly as good as Mello is, but I think he's right there. Ilya Dragunov, same thing. Like he just speaks with such conviction. And I don't know if it's a fact that he's Russian and like all of that, but with the accent and just his delivery, but you look at him, he's not a big dude, but I wouldn't want to mess with him, you know? And he's able to deliver that in his promos. I would not want to mess with the dude. And I might have I'm not a big dude, like I'm not a tall guy, but I might have an inch or two on him. Yeah, so really looking forward to seeing how they actually are able, the three of them are able to coexist against Schism next week. It's my guess, in order to kind of keep this whole thing going, because we saw last week Ilya Dragunov tried to interfere in the match with Judgment Day that Mello was in against Judgment Day, cost Mello the match. I'm wondering if we're going to see something similar where, you know, Mello winds up trying to do something to help Ilya out and it costs Ilya the match and Schism wins. And that's going to kind of help the feud between Mello and Ilya, because it is, I mean, it's going to be our main event, I'm sure, at Great American Bash, but it's kind of cold. It's a cold angle, really. You know, it was just last week, Ilya Dragunov beat Bron Breakker, and they're like, oh, or was it last week? Yeah, I think it was last week. It was either last week or week before that he beat Bron Breakker, and they're like, okay, now he's going to Great American Bash, and they really didn't even, like, say that it was for number one contendership or anything like that beforehand. They kind of alluded to maybe, sort of, like, they kind of danced around it, but they didn't definitively say, yeah, it was for the number one contender slot. And they're just like, all right, now he's going to be facing Carmelo Hayes at Great American Bash. So maybe to give this a little bit more, to give the feud a little bit more heat, they, you know, do something next week, shenanigans, and, you know, Melo and Ilya, there's some miscommunication, or even with Trick in there somewhere, there's some miscommunication, costs them the match, and then, you know, winds up blowing up at the Great American Bash. That's my guess.
So who wants to challenge Big Show for the throne of most heel face turns? Could be Scripps. By my count, he showed up in this company as a babyface for the length of one match, turned heel under the mask, got unmasked, went babyface when Axiom unmasked him, and maybe was heel all along. So internally, maybe it's just the one turn, because this was never meant to be an actual turn. This was part of the story all along. But in the mind of the fans, hard to say where Scripps is at any given moment. Axiom and Scripps lose to Bronco Nima and Lucian Price. Great for Nima and Price to get their first win in this match, 2 minutes and 19 seconds. Cool for them winning their debut, but kind of a bummer for them that their debut was about their opponents and not about them. So, yeah, they got the win, but one of their opponents wasn't really in the match. So there you go. Axiom falls to Bronco Nima and Lucian Price. They're impressive stuff, but it will be more impressive when we see them in a longer form match where they are actually meant to. You know what? This length of match would be fine. But this was so much more an angle than a match. So I feel for them a little bit because this is their debut and it's not about them.
I don't know. It might be a little bit. It might be a little bit because the way I took this finish that Scripps is now aligning himself with Lucian Price and Yes, thank you, Bronco Nima.
It's funny because I can always remember the Bronco Nima name, and I have to look back at my notes for Lucian Price.
All right, so between the two of us, we're golden, man.
Yes,
we're golden. All right, but no, I think it might be because I'm with you. I'm totally with you, and I think I even said that in the hits and misses that it kind of felt like it was more about Axiom and Scripps. But when they were walking out back, when they like left the ring, the three of them walked out together and you had Lucian on one side, Bronco on the other side, Scripps in the middle. And I'm wondering if now we're going to see Scripps as a bit of a leader of yet another faction, another stable. So if that's the case, I'm kind of okay with it because it sets up that, you know, they were his heavies to begin with. I'm still not sure where, how they really weave that into the story because it doesn't really make sense, I guess, with what they were talking about with Axiom and Scripps up until now, but whatever. I'm sure they can make it work. It's wrestling. They can make anything work. But yeah, I'm impressed with them so far. You know, Nima Prince is, he's no longer, he's on the Raw now. Elton Prince. I kept doing that in the hits and misses too. I was writing Prince. And I'm like, no, it's Price. But I'm impressed with them. They've got a great look. They seem to move around the ring pretty good. But again, I want to see them in a longer form match before I, you know, say anything. They kind of, it's almost like they remind me of Crime Time, just trying to like be a little bit, not a like a comedic thing, like an actual. Like I dug it. I dug this gimmick. Like the graphics, for example, like when they made their entrance tonight, looked exactly like they were stripped out of GTA 5. Like, so I get what they're trying to go for here. It's, you know, it's a gimmick that's kind of like tried and true, I guess, many times over in wrestling, but at the same time, like, it works. And if you get a couple guys that can do it, make it believable, sure, do it. I dig it. I dig what their look, their in-ring stuff. I just want to see them in a little bit of a longer match so far to kind of solidify that they seem to be as good of a worker as we saw tonight. Workers.
You made me sad because Shad Gaspard was one of the world's good guys.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
Oh, he was. Yeah, let's move on. Eddie Thorpe versus Oral Mensah. This was set up earlier in the night. Noam Dar is still real, real sad, guys. He's still being pushed around.
I love it.
Drooling out of his mouth. It's funny that this guy is achieving comedy even through doing very little. But that's a magical thing to be able to do. And it works because Lash can do some of the heavy lifting on the mic. She's gotten to this point where she always had energy. She always had some kind of charisma, but now she's making it work in a wrestling context. I don't know how to explain what has changed exactly, but I really like what she's able to do to pump up that group. Jakara Jackson has a little bit of what Lash has. Oro has a little bit of what those two girls have. But Lash is definitely doing the heavy lifting on the mic while Noam Dar is sad. This is humorous to me that he would be. Nate, we've talked about the fact that I created a federation and did it with dice when I was a young kid. I had a character.
We have an entire podcast about that over at Deej Time on YouTube.
We do indeed.
Yes.
I have a character who was as in love with his championship as Noam Dar was with the Heritage Cup. And I did the same story where he actually even named the championship and went on dates with it.
That's amazing.
I had him do that as well. And when he lost the championship, real me was sad. I booked him in a match that I didn't think he'd lose and he lost. But what are you going to do? So yes, this was, wow. I went way off script there. Didn't know we'd talk about my fake wrestler, Jack Stanton, but we just did. Okay, so Mackenzie, you talked to Eddie Thorpe. Yes, metaphor. Got to this match. Eddie Thorpe, I'm sure, would rather take on Noam Dar, but this was the rarely seen win. Was this the first win for Oral Mensah? Maybe he got a that's a good question. He might have had a chance to win. But he was thrown right there in the mix. He was he started off in the ladder match. So this one goes 4:41. Nothing wrong with this, except for the fact that it was very, very overbooked. Dominic Dijak got involved here against Eddie Thorpe, who fought that off, but instead I think Lash hit him with something, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yes. At any rate, not a clean win, but that's not how metaphor is supposed to win right now. So 4:41. Talk about the match if you want, but it's mostly just an excuse to talk about this very amusing faction.
Yeah, pretty much. The match itself was good. Nothing really to write home about, other than the fact that it was a little bit overbooked, with Dijak coming out, and it looks like we're going to wind up seeing Dijak versus Eddie Thorpe. Dijak attacked Eddie Thorpe, fill the match out help finish the match. So I think that's probably where that's going to go. But yeah, metaphor, that is, they're kind of quickly becoming one of my favorite things in NXT. Lash Legend, like you said, not only is she doing the heavy lifting on the mic, she did the heavy lifting period tonight. She lifted Noam Dar up and rolled him into the ring, and he's just lying there lifeless, like dude, you just lost the title and you're comatose. I love it. I absolutely love it. But Lash Legend, like you said, I think she's really come out of her shell here. What you know, you said you weren't sure what it is that has changed. And I think the only thing that's changed is the fact that she has people around her now. Before, she's talking about, you know, how great she is and how awesome Lash Legend is. And she's trying to fit into that what the hell was the name of her, the TV show that she had, the fake show?
Lashing Out.
Yeah, she was trying to fit into that mold at first. And then she was trying to figure out how to kind of, like, you know, where she really kind of sat after they had, I guess, canceled Lashing Out. So, you know, her charisma was there, but I don't think she really had something to necessarily latch onto character-wise to then make us, invested in her as a character. Now she has three other people around her, Noam Dar as well, who is an amazing, I guess actor right now, considering he's able, like you said, he's able to pull off this awesome comedic spot with literally just staring like he's comatose. So she's got these other people around her, and now she's able to talk about the faction. She's able to talk about the group and basically be the cheerleader and the hype man or hype woman for the group. And I think that's probably playing to her strengths a little bit more than trying to hype herself up when she still really didn't have a full understanding of what that character was. Or even if she did have a full understanding of what that character was, it wasn't coming across as that effectively to the audience. I think that might be what it is. Going back to Noam Dar too, like, fantastic. Actually, I don't really have anything more to say about Noam Dar. I just love this whole sad Corbin gimmick. It's great. Jakar Jackson or Omensa, I think they're doing a great job for what they are right now. I think, you know, give it a little bit of time, they'll probably have some more involvement in things with, you know, some backstage segments and whatnot. But because, I mean, and maybe they already have. It's just Jakar Jackson, Lash Legend and Noam Dar are the ones that are standing out to me. But yeah, overall, Metaphor, two thumbs up. And I just can't wait to see Metaphor and Chase University go at it, because that's going to be loud and hilarious.
I hadn't thought about it, and now that you mention it, I don't know why I hadn't thought about it. You know, it's funny, when you get heavy doses of one of those two on the show, it seems like the other faction is a little bit less shown. Like, they know it's too much. If you give us too much of both, they save it. They meet it out, so it's one or the other. But let's go to Chase U, because Thea Hale, folks, is staying in the title picture despite the fact that that she can't drink. Folks, she's a kid. Thea Hale versus Electra Lopez. Man, you could have knocked me flat when Electra walked out there. It has been a long time with Lola Vice in her corner. 1 minute, 17 seconds. Thea Hale just drops Electra Lopez. Electra had an inset interview, and my wife said, well, she's not that comfortable on the mic. And I said, she's not, but she's quite a bit better than she used to be. And my wife just kind of looked at me like, oh, okay.
Well, then.
Yeah, she is quite a bit better than she used to be. In the ring, she's quite a bit better than she used to be. But we saw where she started, Nate, and we know that that isn't necessarily enough. Quite a bit is not enough. So, yeah, I just don't – it seems like there's just a couple of talents that this company wants so hard to succeed. Maybe HBK is just real thirsty. Electra Lopez and Nikita Lyons, they just want them to happen so badly. And and every time they're featured, they don't happen. But I don't know. In this role, it's fine for Electra, but this role will also not being like the absolute low person getting dropped in under 2 minutes. I mean, I thought that Kona Reeves was awesome when he was doing this, but it also signified that they had no plans for the guy. But Sia, on the other hand, continued. I gushed about her. I was on Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks on Sunday, and Thea Hale came up. She was the only NXT talent who did, and I talked to her about her a lot. I don't know if she's main roster championship material, but she's main roster Santino material. But she could be there a long time and fulfill a really good role. And if she gets championships, awesome. That's awesome. Santino did. So she can too. But if
literally
happens,
in his debut.
Yes. But that's when they were trying to go on his, like they were trying to go with the badass thing. Because if a guy can be really hilarious and he can also be a badass, you've got to try him as a badass first because you can get him to the main event there. Didn't work. So luckily they had Goofy Santino to fall back on. But Thea Hale, it's a rematch. And it's going to be a submission match, which she tried to get Tiffany Stratton to agree to, and she wouldn't, so she snapped her into a submission move, so she'd agree to it. I still come away from this thinking that Thea won't win this, but, man, they're milking this, and they're getting a lot out of it, and I love that they are, because Thea is worth this effort to me. Nate?
So it's not what you're asking about, but neither one of us have done it yet. So if you want to be part of the show, 515-605-9345, hit one on the switchboard. We do have a few people in the caller queue. So if you want to be part of the show, talk to Kelly and I, let us, hit one. We'll bring you on. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. We do have an email from Kevin Catani, which we'll hit in a little bit. But I just thought about that. And I'm like, I'm going to throw it out there. Thea Hale. Oh my God. I think Thea Hale is probably my favorite thing in NXT right now, and I'm not even kidding. The energy, the charisma is off the charts. I feel like she, even at 19, 20 years old, however old she is right now, under 21, she understands the nuances of her character. At first, I thought she was being like when we first saw her debut with what was Bonehead's name?
Bodie Hayward.
Bodie Hayward. Thank you. That's why I thought Bonehead. Bodie. There we go. When she first debuted with him, I even though I liked the character, I was kind of thinking, okay, maybe she's a little over the top. Like it was fine for me. Like I like that kind of comedy, but I'm like, all right, this might grow weary for people after a while. But I feel like it's not her not getting it and being over the top. I feel like it's she's really getting it and being over the top and in the best way possible. The fact that she's kind of in this almost like savant type role right now where she's being presented as a green wrestler, somebody who's very new to the business and still learning as part of Chase U. But all of a sudden now she learned this Kimura lock and she can just lock it in when she wants and make somebody tap out. That's awesome. Like I love where they're going with this. Do I think she's going to win the women's title? No, especially not right now. Tiffany Stratton just won the title. She's had a couple defenses so far, but Stratton's on a roll. Stratton's on a path to take a word out of Cameron Grimes' book. She's going to the moon. And I don't think it's her time to lose the title anytime soon. But Thea Hale, I think, is going to come very close. We might even see her get another visual win with that Kimura lock, make Stratton tap again with, behind the ref's back, with a ref bump, something like that. But you just like you, Kelly, I don't necessarily see her as winning a WWE Women's Championship, whether it be Raw or SmackDown, Championship or, or even the NXT Women's Championship for that matter. If she does, awesome. And I'm going to be there for the ride the whole time. I don't necessarily think that's like in the cards for her at the moment with this current incarnation of the character. But like you said, I think if she's able to keep this up and reinvent herself here and there, heel turn, coming back to face, whatever, but, you know, still be able to be a comedic and effective character, but still stay fresh and reinvent herself. I agree. I think she's going to have a really effective and long-term career at this, at the company or in wrestling, maybe not necessarily WWE, but just in wrestling in general.
All right. There is one other match. We got to talk about it, I guess. Gigi Dolin versus Kiana James.
We don't have to. We could skip it. It's not like, there's anybody holding a gun to her head in her hand.
That's true. James over Dolin, 335. I really wish both of these would speed up their offense. That is everything I'm going to say about this one. Okay. Baron Corbin. He went to the Tiki Torches and had a conversation with himself. He's doing this as him. So that's cool. Dominic and Rhea talked to Lyra Valkyria, is a heel turn in Lyra Valkyria's future. I would not necessarily be on board. I think she'll be fine, but it's not what I would do with her at this point. Gable Stevenson is going to talk about his future next week. Weird thing to promote, but that is going to happen. Dana Brooke talked to Kehlani Jordan, was teaching her stuff. Not sure why one would sit under the learning tree of Dana Brooke, but she said, "I learned a lot from you, Dana." Dana said, "I feel the same. I learned from you." I turned to my wife and said, "Dana can use it more than Kehlani can." I take a lot of shots at Dana. I have nothing specific against her, but she has a hard cap and it's not high. And Blair Davenport and Roxanne Perez had not exactly face-to-face, a side-to-side conversation. Blair she's so snotty. She's a really effective heel. If there's somebody who could be a Dominic-type heel on a smaller scale on this show, it would be Blair because she just makes you want to see her get punched. Roxy, still a work in progress on the mic, but getting tiny bits more confident every time she's out there. They also did a thing earlier on in the show with her and Booker T being filmed by the secret NXT person. And they both took issue with this because they were being secretly filmed. Maybe should have taken issue with this. Roxy should have, because she is tiny, especially next to Booker T. It was like
staggering.
it was like people were just, it was like two different members of the animal kingdom. Like, they're that different in height. It was something, quite the visual. So I will say I agree with Bruce in our chat. That is some of the best commentating that Booker has done on this show ever. He did not undercut it with some laughs about, haha, look at that thing we did. He really paid off that he was pissed off that he was being watched. So on the other stuff that happened, Nate.
Yeah. So I guess we'll start there. With Roxanne Perez, Blair Davenport, and Booker T stuff. First, I agree. Booker T, probably some of the best stuff he's done in NXT so far. Like, is no shucky ducky quack quack, no random comment about something that doesn't matter. He actually showed like a lot of conviction and like what the hell? Why were we watched? You know, I mean, it was still weird that you guys are standing at the angle you were standing at while being filmed by the person that you clearly couldn't see. But whatever, we'll just ignore that. With the side-by-side with Blair Davenport and Roxanne Perez, I like the way they presented this. Roxanne Perez, I want to, I want to get behind Roxanne Perez. Like I like you know, the actual physical like person behind the Roxanne Perez character, right? But I like the character as well. Her mic work, it's there's something about the mic work, and I can't quite put my finger on it. It's not the fact that it's still kind of, you know, just robotic, and it definitely sounds like she's just reciting lines. It's not even just that. It's, I think it's the fact that, and I almost hate saying this because I am somebody that does suffer from a lot of anxiety and stuff, but it's almost hard for me. Like, one of the things she said is like, I've got to conquer my anxiety to beat you. And I'm like, that's not something, like, I guess you can look up to somebody like that, that, you know, is conquering their anxiety to go ahead and do something. But it was the way that she said it and presented it that made me almost feel bad for her rather than want to see her overcome that anxiety and win, if that makes sense, right? Like, I'm not saying it's bad to, like,
I think it kind of comes off as pandering. Like, they want to use something that's out there in the public eye right now, but they're not – they don't have someone with the aplomb to really write that with
that
enough
script.
Realism to make it work. It's a little clumsy, and wrestling, and I'll kind of forgive them for that, because wrestling has tried to on occasion get in front of a social issue, and they don't always get in front of it, but and sometimes it looks real dumb in hindsight, but it makes a lot more sense when you kind of put it in the context of they were trying to be one of the first to actually tackle this issue. And they're not the first to tackle this, but this is the first time wrestling has really tried to tackle this, because it doesn't really fit into wrestling. And maybe it won't, but it's cool that they're trying to do something with it.
No, 100%. And, you know, I'm all about mental health awareness. It's, you know, my other side project is all about, you know, self-care, mental health awareness, all that stuff. So, like, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. And it's not like, I'm not trying to say, like, I feel like, you know, Roxanne Perez is coming across as weak for having, you know, anxiety or anything like that. But it was the way that it came across. Maybe it is that it's coming across to me like it's pandering, and it definitely is. And maybe that's what it is that's kind of not sitting right with me. But it, like I said, there's something about it that isn't clicking. It's not working for me. And I'm sure if it's not working for me, it's not working for other people. Blair Davenport, on the other hand, though, I'm all in. Like, I think, like you said, I think she's got the capability to be a massive, massive, like, just black hole of heat. Or not black hole. I guess that would mean she wasn't getting black heat. I don't know. Draw a lot of heat. Let's just say that. She's a heat magnet. She's great in the ring, but I mean, her mic work is great. Plus she's got the British accent, and she's able to make it sound just very snotty and I'm better than you. And she has the in-ring skills to prove that. So I'm down with it. I think it would be a different type of a heel than Dom, because like Dom doesn't necessarily have like the in-ring skills to back it up. He's always, you know, like we saw tonight, we've got the Judgment Day picked up the win, not necessarily him, if you know, as we said. Whereas Blair Davenport, she'd actually be able to back up her words with her actions. So that's the only, you know, that's the biggest difference. But I think she's gonna be like big in NXT once she gets a couple more feuds under her belt here, and if they continue to push her in the way that they have. I feel like there was one other thing that I'm not touching on.
Baron Corbin, and at SummerSlam, they're going to wrestle with Paul Bearer in one corner and Ted DiBiase in the other.
I don't remember seeing this. Like, I must have, because, like, I was watching a little late. I was fast forwarding through commercials. I'm wondering if I fast forwarded right through the segment.
Well, of course, I made up the stuff about Paul Bearer and Ted DiBiase.
I figured as much, but I don't remember a Baron Corbin segment.
Yeah, Baron Corbin paid off the segment from last week where he was walking toward the tiki torches and somebody in a hoodie, and he was saying like he's leaving all his old gimmicks behind. And when he got there, he said, "I'm doing this as myself." And the person in the black hoodie turned around, and it was Baron Corbin, and it was just Baron Corbin looking at Baron Corbin. And then the voiceover said, "I'm doing this as myself." Not sure what myself is.
Okay.
I joked to my wife. I was like, "He's going to come out as a lineman for the Arizona Cardinals," which would be amusing to me because he did that for a few minutes. But that's what it is. It was.
We'll see him debut next week as Thomas Pestock, his real name.
Is that his real name?
Yeah.
Kind of
Thomas Pete. P-E-S-T-O-C-K.
All right. I mean, that's the kind of name that real people have.
Yes.
They don't have names like Baron Corbin. So I don't know why I'm surprised to learn it wasn't Corbin, but I've literally never read up on the guy because I never quite had enough interest. But
you've got a porn star name.
I do. I'm a dangerous guy to Google. So there you go. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Kevin Gattani has done just that. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I guess it's safe to say that my 2023 NXT bingo card is now busted. What the heck am I going to do for the next 5 months? In all seriousness, I'm both surprised and not. What is the long-term play here other than getting a lot of heat on Dom? I feel like this knocks the NA title down a peg, yeah? Or am I being too dramatic? I feel like Mello and West did well to make the NA title feel significant, especially on NXT, and now we have a chicken shit heel holding the title as a main roster talent. I'm sure you will cover this in depth, but I have an icky feeling about this, not just because it's Dom. That said, is the next step a rematch with West at the next NXT PLE? And if he just drops it back, what was the value in the switch? Ugh, let me stop before I get too much more worked up. How about the G1, eh? The G1's not been very good so far, so thanks for bringing that up, Kevin. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to AYB.
Kevin.
Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. You are being overdramatic. This was awesome.
Clap, clap, clap.
Yes, it was. If he loses it right back, then the purpose in the first place was to have Dominic on the show and then create an extra reason for people to watch Great American Bash because they want to watch Dominic lose the North American title. That's what it's for. They're using Dominic to perfection. Nobody in the company, save Reigns, is being booked better for who they are than Dominic. I just don't think there's another person like Sammy and KO sometimes.
LA Knight maybe, but
I agree. Sure.
I agree. Dominic is probably right there.
To the level of what he can be, he's being booked the best. I don't have an icky feeling at all. I think this was great and hilarious and all the things you want it to be. And the fact that it freaks out the normies is exactly what they want. They really want people to be upset that he is holding this title with so much prestige. That is what this was for. Since he brought up the G1 climax, I will bring that up also. I am 2.5 shows in. 3 of the shows have been put up, but I'm 4 matches behind. I will be watching them right after we finish this show because there's 4 matches from this morning and there will be 8 more tonight. This is the big tournament in New Japan, which is my favorite wrestling that is out there anywhere. And despite all the talent they have, they just have not had a great, big, awesome match yet. There have been some good things, but I am the first guy to tell you, you got to go see this and look at these few matches. And so far there are no matches. So how about that G1? It's being booked interestingly. There's that, but I don't have a match to point you to yet. Time, I will try to do that for you. So, Nate, anything else on this email?
Honestly, I think we covered it in the beginning, so And then you kind of said what I was going to say. So, no, I think I'm good.
All right. I was going to sign off, and then a hand went up. So we will see if we can get a couple questions out of here and then run for the exit. But this is 914. Go ahead and tell us what you thought of the show.
Hey, guys, it's Brad in Florida, and I just Googled Kelly Wells, and it wasn't the greatest experience.
Yeah, you can find us both on IMDb. You can find me in, like, 5 to 7 credits of legitimate film, and she has something like 260 credits. The girl can work. I'll say that. She's a hard worker. So there you go.
Yeah, she apparently can do a lot of things, but thanks for taking my call. I don't have that much to add, honestly. The only thing I'll say is, like, I'm kind of surprised with the way that crowd is, that they didn't try to, like, throughout the show get, or even before the match started with Wes and Dom, to get even more heat on Dom. Like, you had chance throughout the match of, Dom's not ready, and then half the crowd's going, yes, he is. Like, I would have liked to, after Alicia Tyler, I think that's her name, right? Alicia Tyler announced them.
Taylor.
I would have liked
Taylor,
to have seen
yes.
Taylor.
Alicia
my bad.
Tyler's
my bad.
On Whose Lines Anyway.
Oh, my bad. yeah, so after she announced them, I would have liked to have seen Dom grab the mic and, say something, chicken-ish, like, I'm going to walk in here to NXT and I'm going to take the title from your little golden boy or just something like that. Where I just feel like throughout the show, there was no building up heat on Dom. So I feel like it would have felt so much more intense. I still think it was very cool at the end, but I would have just liked to have seen a little bit more of that. And I did think it was hilarious. And if you guys touched upon it earlier before I started listening, I always go back and listen to the whole thing, but and it was so funny when Tony D'Angelo walked past Dom and said, like, Benny from the joint says hi, like all these prisoners, like, no Dom, like the Dom was in prison for like 25 minutes. Really funny stuff. I mean, that was hilarious. What do you guys think about, like, I just feel like they didn't build Dom up to be as hateable tonight as they've been doing on the main roster. And, I feel like that affected the way the crowd reacted to his win and everything that was going on during the match.
That crowd is the legitimate, like, definition of bizarro world, though.
Yeah, it's basically like putting a show in front of the Raw After Mania crowd every single night. They're all hardcores. Tom Stout, who I do 8 years back with and who used to be on this show, he used to go there every single week and has done so less of late, but still goes to the shows sometimes. And he sees the same people all the time. And all these people that we recognize as fans that go to all the shows, like, he knows them. He knows them by name. And some of them he really likes, and a very large amount of them just want to be the show. So that's part of it. But what you also get with that is fans that just really, really enjoy somebody who puts in the work to be great at their role. And unfortunately, that means that a lot of them are going to kind of want to cheer Dom because he's so good at being a heel. And he and Rhea are so good at that. So I guess that maybe gets in their way. For them, not wanting to do any more to put any sizzle on this and make him more heelish throughout the night, I think it's as simple as the fact that Dominic has so much heat that they probably didn't think they had to. But I also wouldn't be surprised to learn that Dominic was out there in front of the crowd pre-show getting himself booed, because that's sometimes something they do at these shows too. That wouldn't stun me. I wouldn't be surprised either way, Nate.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either. If I mean, there's been a couple times now where I've gone to, well, they weren't NXT events, but they were, I think, you know, Raws and SmackDowns, where yeah, there were definitely things that happened either before the show or during commercial break that would try to elicit a particular response from the crowd. So I wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. I'm like, I don't know if they did a worse job presenting him tonight. Like, it wasn't really anything that I had thought about. But I kind of just feel like his reputation precedes him at this point. Like, everybody kind of knows what Dom's about. And even, you know, bringing him down to NXT, the NXT crowd is still familiar with the main roster stuff for the most part, right? It's the other way around. So it's like when you bring somebody up from NXT, you've got to kind of reintroduce them to the main or introduce them to the main roster. But when you bring somebody down, you don't. And, I don't think they needed to really do a whole lot to try and build that heat. He just has that heat right now. He's got that heat stored in the refrigerator somewhere. That doesn't make sense. Why would you put heat in a refrigerator, Nate? I don't know. But you know what I mean? He's got the heat stored somewhere, and he's carrying it with him from town to town. His suitcase, that makes more sense. So I think that's kind of more of what it is. But, yeah, and in terms of that crowd, I think Kelly's, got it right. It's basically the Raw after WrestleMania crowd just every single week. What the heck? And I can't – Izzy, that was her name. Brad, if I'm not mistaken, I think you said last week, like you've only been kind of watching again for the last couple years or so, but back
exactly.
In like 2016, 2017, there was like this little girl named Izzy who like was a Bayley super fan. I don't know. You might know who she is, might not. I don't know. But she was like this Bayley super fan, wound up working her way into the story. And she was just a fan, just a little girl in the crowd. But like, she kind of became like this, everybody in WWE knew who Izzy was, or at least who watched NXT knew who Izzy was. And like, after that, I feel like everybody, or not everybody, but there's a whole bunch of people down there that just, they wanted to be the next Izzy. They wanted to, break out and try to stand out and like make it on TV and stuff. And the crowd has always just been there. Sometimes you love them and sometimes you hate them. And it's tough to gauge sometimes, but yeah.
I will tell you without a whole lot more explanation that Izzy and her family are the source of much. That's a lot of ground to cover. And there's some messed up stuff in that story. So wrestling fans are wrestling fans. You people all know who they are. Even
Carney's
as a wrestling fan. Yes. I am a wrestling fan who occasionally wears wrestling shirts, and I go out at work and I'm ringing out somebody wearing a wrestling shirt. Wrestling's my favorite thing in the world. And I'm still like, I'm not going to tell this guy that, that I like the wrestler on his shirt. Because I don't know where this conversation will head. So there you go, Brad, go ahead.
Yeah. No, thank you. And it's funny with the guys in the crowd. Like, I always see that guy with the Mets shirt every single week. The guy, the Mets fan who's always in the corner by the ring steps, who doesn't watch the Mets games, I guess, but he's watching NXT every Tuesday. But it's you're right. The crowd does try to. And just on the crowd really quick, like, I notice sometimes they try to be like super respectful of these young talent that are trying to get their bearings. And sometimes they'll be really quiet during a promo, but it was interesting tonight when Tiffany came out with the "you tapped out" stuff. Like, do you think that's just good practice for someone like Tiffany? And that's like something that they want to go for, because I felt like she was just getting a little bit flustered by the "you tapped out" chance. Not as a character, but just as like trying to remember her lines. You could just tell she was not expecting that or whatever it was. And it was kind of throwing her off, as opposed to the way that they were very quiet during Dragunov and Carmelo and stuff like that. Now, obviously there was something to chant, but do you think that's just good practice for them? Or like, cause I feel like sometimes the crowd is sympathetic to the fact that these are developmental people and not everything's going to be perfect, and give them their space to do their thing. And I feel like tonight they didn't go that route with Tiffany for the most part.
Let me open by saying I think that was by design. I think that the Chase U fans that were holding up the tap out signs, they started those chants, and that was to put over the submission match that is being booked. But I also think exactly what you're thinking, this is good practice for her. If she's going to be met with these chants, if you're out there being met with the chants, you can either flounder, be drowned by them, or you can be somebody like, to name a few, Alexa Bliss, who knows how to turn a chant into power to her. Steve Austin did this all the time. The Rock did this. The Saints sing along with the champ. They knew how to turn those moments into positives for them. So this is good practice for her. So even though I think this was all by design to get over the submission match that was going on, I would say that that Tiffany, if she continues to play this kind of role, and she should, because it's the part she was born to play, baby, then she should be figuring out how to handle these fan moments, because there will be a lot of them. Nate, anything to add?
Yeah, I don't have really a whole heck of a lot to add from what you said. I mean, it's definitely good for her to get those reps in, you know, because you never know what a crowd's going to chant. You know, I think in 2023, it's probably going to be a little bit easier than it was like in the 70s and 80s and stuff, when, you know, crowds would be throwing batteries and stuff at you. But
oh, yeah. Goldust had to deal with a lot of chants that
you know, so I think it's definitely a little bit easier now than it was back in the day, but that doesn't mean it's still easy to have an entire crowd, you know, chanting at you while you're trying to go out there and, you know, deliver a promo and remember what you're trying to do and you know, hit your marks and all that. So, I mean, I think it's the more that she's able to do that, especially in a developmental setting like NXT, is going to be, you know, is going to be just good experience for her once she gets up to the main roster and she, you know, she's in front of like a Raw after WrestleMania crowd, or, you know, they take a trip to the UK. I mean, the UK crowds are absolutely phenomenal. You know, so like something like that, but yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. I think that's all I was going to say. So there we go.
Yeah.
Brad, do you have more?
My very last thing, and I don't even know if this is something I really should be asking, but I just want to ask you guys, because I don't know the answer to it. Like, that ending of the Dominic match was a very I wouldn't say very complicated, but it had a lot of moving parts to it, right? Like, you have the distraction by Finn, and that triggers the Damian coming in with the briefcase, and that triggers Wes, you know, ducking it and then going back to the corner and then getting hit with the belt by Rhea and all these different things. Like, do you guys have any knowledge on how these guys, I mean, do they completely rehearse that for an half hour before the match? Do they just call it in the ring? I'm just curious. Like, I feel like it's a lot to remember when you also have to, you know, look the part out there and do the moves. And I just feel like it's like a very complicated thing that I don't know how they do it. I mean, is it called in the ring? Or if you guys don't know the answer, and I don't know if that's a really dumb question, maybe it shouldn't even be asked, but I'm just curious if you guys know the answer to that. And I really appreciate you taking the call.
It's not dumb. I do know the answer. There are people who book these finishes specifically. This is what Pat Patterson did in the company for many, many, many years. Most of the years he was there, he did finishes. And you know, I say that, but he also did moments. So if there were key moments in the match you have to hit, then you do those also. So for instance, like the Rock and Triple H, was it Backlash? 60-minute match, the Iron Man match, there's multiple finishes. Somebody like him would figure out how those finishes were going to go. But especially if there was going to be a big angle, then they would lean heavily on this person. With this many moving parts, they would not leave that to chance. They would never ask them to do this on the fly and figure it out. If things go awry, then they have to know how to figure that out. But this went so well, I find it hard to believe that anything could have gone awry. It all looked very strong to me. So I think this probably went off as it did. This is the kind of thing that requires rehearsal for the wrestlers, whereas doing a match together normally doesn't, because you normally know your opponent, you know their offense, you know the bumps you're going to have to take and things like that. So you've kind of know each other. And these two, they've never wrestled on TV before. So that is something, or off TV before. So they probably worked on some things like, this is my offense, this is where you have to take a bump. But there was probably more put into this finish. So finishes like this are very carefully rehearsed, because this is the story that has to be told. Whereas in a match, if a German suplex goes wrong, big freaking deal. Like they can figure out a way around that. It's not an ongoing story you have to tell. It's botching an actual storyline is much worse than botching a move, a transitional move. So yes, this is somebody where they have somebody who this is their primary job, to figure out these finishes, figure out these spots. And it's kind of nebulous. Sometimes it's the head booker. Sometimes the head booker has somebody who does this for them. Like I said, Pat Patterson did this for many years, but so yeah, not just the Royal Rumble, that guy, he's also a genius as to wrestling psychology. Oh, I love Pat Patterson. But yeah,
don't you though?
Not a dumb question. And gave me an excuse to gush about Pat Patterson, who gave me the Royal Rumble, my favorite thing in wrestling ever. Nate, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I just want to, I guess, clarify a little bit is the role that Pat Patterson would play. He's a producer or an agent, and generally the producer and the agent will work with the talent to not just put the finish together, but the entire match together. Depends on the talent. I mean, sometimes you get to, you know, veteran talents, they're like, all right, I've got the finish, you know, we'll put the match together ourselves. We'll tell the agent what we're doing. The agent will, you know, maybe put his, you know, magical fairy dust. I'm saying that because of Pat Patterson, magical fairy dust, on the match itself, and, you know, kind of send you on your way. But yeah, that's generally how it would be, is, you know, how Kelly outlined it. So yeah, there we go.
Yeah, glad we got that call, because talking about Pat Patterson makes me happy. So thank you, Brad. And if you got anything else, go ahead. And if not, that'll be that.
No, thank you, guys. Thanks so much for taking that call.
Absolutely, thanks, Brad. Always love bantering with you. So that, I believe, is our show. We've got a go-home show next week that I'll be recapping. And after that, it seems like Bruce is stuck doing Great American Bash. I say stuck because there are no commercials and lots of wrestling minutes. It's harder to recap. So even though they're fun shows, that is the way they go. So that is what we've got coming down the pipe. I'm interested in this show. They're not building this like they did the last show, but there is still time for a great go home. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at spookymilk.games, Nate.
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the hits and misses for NXT on pwtorch.com. So I try to get those up pretty much within minutes of NXT going off the air. So check those out when they go up.
All right. Cheers, folks. And we will see you in 7.